Growing up, my mom made every lunch bag an ornate tapestry of her love for us. Each morning, she made it her top priority to send us to school, knowing that we meant the world to her. And while none of her kids ever really appreciated her expressions of affection, that didn't stop my mom from constantly declaring how she adored us with every ounce of her soul.
I love you so much.
I love you too.
I love you.
Mom!
And the basketball pep rally is after lunch. Also, Barry Goldberg, your mother loves you.
You didn't say it with love. Barry, I love you.
I love you, Boopy. I love you so much. Hey, you, with the window open, tell my baby I love him. Adam, if you need to make, call me. I'll pick you up.
My father, on the other hand, was not nearly as effusive.
Why you gotta be a moron all the time?
Don't be a moron. Get your ass home.
You're a moron.
Oh, yeah, my dad was miles from sentimental.
Okay. Heading off to prom.
Erica, wait. Can you give me the remote?
And no matter what we did, my dad was literally incapable of saying, I love you.
Great pass, Bobby. I love you, son. Bear! Hey, Bear! I want to beat the traffic. Catch a ride home with Bobby.
He couldn't even say I love you when Erica was accepted into the governor's school, a prestigious summer music program. But my mother more than made up for it.
And I'm not saying other people don't love their children. I'm just saying I love mine way more than they love theirs. So to sum it all up, Mama Hawk's gonna miss Baby Bird. Here, I bought you a going away present.
I'm sure you'll look at it every night.
Oh, good. A photo album. Not the leather jacket or boots I wanted.
And now your father would like to say a few heartfelt words.
No, I'm good. You're a 20-minute speech covered all the bases.
Speech! Tell your daughter how you feel.
This is gonna be so uncomfortable.
Speech! Speech!
Shut up, Barry. Take the knife away from him.
Erica, you're my first kid. Could have been worse.
What he meant to say was that he loves you so much, baby.
But then my dad really opened his heart.
Sure.
Wow.
Yeah, for him, that's as open as it gets.
Well, you know, nobody teaches us how to do these things, right? I mean, when you become a parent, or if you're not a parent one day, when you do become a parent, you know, there's no class to take that tells you, here's how you relate to your kids, here's how you build the next generation. There's all kinds of books, but there's not like one book that kind of says, hey, here's how you do it. Here's how to get prepared to, you know, launch rockets to prepare kids that you're investing in, that God's given you to, you know, make a difference in the world. And so we're beginning this new series today, as Eric said, and we're going to be doing that. We're going to be looking at what it means to enable and really empower the next generation to go beyond us, to do greater things than what we've even done. So it's really exciting to have you here today. My name's Kurt, and if we haven't met, it's great to meet you today. Now, just out of curiosity, so I have a little bit of context today. How many of us in the room have an infant in our home? Just out of curiosity, how many infants? All right, awesome. How many preschool parents in the house? Oh, my word, yes. All right, we're praying for you. All right, it will get better. All right, it really will. You will make it, and that you'll exit the phase. How many of you are parents of elementary children or tweens, you know, 11, 12-year-olds? Wow, a lot of us on that front, too. How many of us have teenagers in the house? Holy cow, you're probably drinking a lot is my guess. All right, that's part of how you make it through that season. How many of you have adult children that are no longer in your home, or just adult children? They might be in your home still. But you have adult children. Okay, yes. Now, just to kind of show us the context of how this applies to all of us, how many of us in the room had a parent growing up? All right, awesome. You know, so bottom line is that, you know, what we're going to be talking about over these next 5 weeks really does apply to all of us, this idea of building the next generation. And it might explain some things in terms of the stage you're in with your children, or it might explain why you are who you are today. If you maybe don't have kids, but you're like, oh, this explains why there's a gap because my parents didn't do some of these things, or, you know, because we're all affected by our family of origin or the lack thereof, and yet we have a huge opportunity when it comes to our families, it comes to the next generation, that we have the opportunity to shape and form and send to do good things and greater things. Now, I used to be in student ministry. For 12 years, I did student ministry, worked with 7th to 12th graders. I love junior high boys. Love junior high boys. I was weird that way. I just, you know, thought they had all kinds of great energy. But I thought I knew everything you need to know about parenting. until I had a kid. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, I don't know anything about what it means to really raise, you know, children. And so now I have four children who are 7, 10, 13, and 14. And so when I tell you right off the top today that I am not an expert as a father, I really mean that, all right? And you'll see through some of my stories today and examples that, you know, I've learned a lot over 14 years of parenting, but I am no expert. But today, I want to kind of start us off with a 50,000-foot, you know, altitude, if you will, on, you know, what our role is when it comes to equipping the next generation, whether you're a parent or you're a coach or you're mentoring students or you're in some way, shape, or form responsible for on-ramping employees in your office, whatever it might be, you know. And next week, we're going to look at this kind of process of parenting specifically, and a lot of what we're going to be talking about is going to apply to parenting, but you know, the role of parenting really is to become best friends with your kids. I mean, I think that's how God hardwired it. Not necessarily when they're younger, but they're stages you go through to get to the place when later in life you're really good friends with them. And so we're going to look at this next week. And this is a process that I talk about probably more frequently than any other thing when I meet with parents. And so, and yet much of what we talk about today is really going to apply to everyone, even if you're not a parent. You know, again, if you're a coach, mentor, if you just have the opportunity to shape the next generation, there are going to be a lot of takeaways. Now, something really cool with this series is we're going to give you a free book. This is something some of you have received. It's called Don't Miss It. In January, we gave all of our families with children fourth grade below, when you checked your kids in through Kids Check-In, you received one of these books. If you did not receive this book, or if you've recently started coming to Crosspoint, or you're a parent of a teenager or a grandparent, these are available at Connection Point today, and you can stop by Connection Point and you can grab one. If you have one in your family, I'm going to ask you not to take one. Go dig it out from wherever you buried it, because it's going to be really important as we go through these next few weeks. And so you're going to get that. Reggie Joyner and Kristen Ivey, who wrote this, just give us really powerful pictures of what it looks like to parent like every week counts. And that's what we're going to look at today. And so much of what we're going to see today, some of it comes out of this book. But what I want us to see is that time ultimately determines the legacy that you and I leave when it comes to the next generation. Time. And here's the thing. Time is fleeting. All right, time is generated. And so when it comes to the next generation, I want you to think of the next generation. If you have an infant that comes into your home, I want you to think of their life similar to this jar of marbles. All right, you have approximately 1,000 weeks that you're going to have with that child from infancy until they graduate from high school and you send them off into the world. And so, you know, actually 936 weeks to be exact, but, you know, give or take, if your kids start school early, if they, you know, wait a year. And at Crosspoint, it's the same. You know, for us here at Crosspoint, I mean, we have 1,000 weekends, you know, from the moment that a child is born until they graduate, and it reminds us that we have a limited amount of time, that we have to make the most of every single opportunity. And so, you know, every week, if we take out a marble, and the next week, we begin to realize time passes very, very quickly. And see, here's the thing. First thing I want us to see this morning is when you see how much time you have left, you tend to get more serious about the time that you have right now, right? See, it's easy for us to get lost in the rush of the day, right? It's easy for us to, you know, kind of forget that time is actually limited, that it's fleeting. And this is not a new idea. In fact, Moses, thousands of years ago, he actually talked about this in the book of Psalms. And we've looked at this before in terms of applying it to our life. But today, I want us to look at it in terms of how this applies, to the lens of raising the next generation. All right, here's what Moses says in Psalm 90. He says, teach us to number our days. Now what you could say this in a way where you say, he could be saying, God, teach me to live as if my days are numbered. All right, teach me to live in a way where I begin to realize that life is not just doesn't just have infinite time, that I actually have a certain number of days. And then he gives a promise in the next part of this verse. Take a look at what he says next. He says, teach us to number our days that, and here's the promise, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach me to number my days so that I may live with a heart of wisdom. Do you know what a heart of wisdom is? I don't either, right? That's supposed to be funny. I didn't think that was very funny. Here's what I do know, though. It means you're not stupid, right? It's the opposite of stupid. When you have a heart of wisdom, at least you're not behaving stupid. But people who have a heart of wisdom are people who understand that they have a limited amount of time. Right? And what that makes us do is we begin thinking about the time that we have left. Whether we're working with kids, raising kids, parenting kids, coaching kids, teenagers, we begin to realize we have a window frame of opportunity. And so whether you have kids in your home or you work with kids or you're on-ramping kids in the office, when you begin to put a certain amount of numbers of days and weeks to their life, you begin to coach them and raise them entirely differently. Second principle I want us to see. When you see how much time you have left, you tend to make what matters matter more. See, when you begin to see that you have a certain amount of time and it's limited, this begins to become like a gigantic countdown clock, right? We were had the chance to go to the Pacers-Cavs game on Thursday night. Holy cow, talk about an incredible first half of basketball, right? Anybody watch the Pacers-Cavs game? Man, it's like 72 points. And then the worst ever half of basketball by the Pacers in the second half, and they lost like, it was like a record-breaking night. No team in the history of the NBA has ever come back from that big of a deficit to win, and our Pacers lost. All right, so we're cheering them on again today. But I tell you what, when you these guys in the NBA, and it's really this way at any professional sport, but especially in the NBA, it's kind of like you go through the whole game, but when you get to the last 4 or 5 minutes, all of a sudden, the time really begins to matter. And all of a sudden, certain things get intensified and certain things get focused, and all of a sudden, the seconds count and the minutes, they begin to count. See, when you begin to see your life and your experience with someone else as a giant countdown clock, you begin to reprioritize. You begin to refocus. See, these jars represent right here my four kids. This is Macy, Matt, Maggie, and Meredith. And they started with 1,000 marbles. Macy's down to 162 marbles. Just calculate it from this weekend until she graduates from high school. And on down the row. And when you begin to see that this is the time, I used to have this, and now I have this, you begin to reprioritize. Because, you know, we want to invest and make sure our kids are ready. The same is true here at Crosspoint. I mean, you know, every week we think about the fact, when we think about building into kids and teenagers, you know, that we have a limited number of weeks with these kids. We think, you know, what are we going to do? I mean, you really begin to prioritize, what are the big rocks that we want to put into these kids' lives before they walk away? Not walk away from God or walk away from church, before they walk away from our homes and from our influence and they graduate and go on to college and on to bigger things. And so it's really important for us to think about that, about what we want every child to walk away with when they walk away. And so that's kind of what this trunk here represents. This represents, you know, when kids kind of walk away, when they're 18 and they go to college. And in here are things we want them to have. We want them to know that God sends them an emoji and says, I love you. My heart loves you. That God's a God who loves and pursues them. All the time, that God will never stop loving them and pursuing them. We want kids, when they walk away from this place, to know that. We want kids to know what it means to be a Christian, right? What it means to be a follower of Jesus, what it means to, you know, have a relationship with Jesus and begin to align with his ways in their life. We want kids to know that. We want kids to, this right here represents community. All right, we want kids to know that they belong to a community. This is the community for my daughter's bed, by the way. All right, she sleeps with these. But do you realize every single student in this building, beginning with the age of 2-year-olds on up, has community in their experience here at Crosspoint? Starting in our toddler room, we have small group experiences because we want kids all the way up into our adult experience to realize that it's important that we have a circle. It's important for us to have a community, to be a part of a community. And then we want kids to know Jesus. We want them to know God's word. We want them to know that there was a light that came, that came and was infused into the world and was given to them, and that they have the ability to have within themselves. And that this is a light that can begin to shine out of their life. See, these are some of the rocks that we realize we've got a limited amount of time to build into these children, into these students. And so, you know, here's the thing. Here's what's crazy. You can't make a kid believe these things. You can't make a kid believe in God. You can't make a child become a Christian. You can't make a teenager, you know, see the world the way God sees the world. And so, you know, sometimes as leaders and as parents, I mean, sometimes I just wish that somebody would have told me this stuff when I was younger, like years ago, but, you know, when I was like so tired all the time. I'm like, because I was trying to do things that I just couldn't do. And I would keep building into those things, but you can't force a kid to have a relationship with God. And that's kind of the point of this whole series. But we can do certain things. And, you know, every parent, every leader who has influence over the next generation, there are certain things we can do and certain things we can't do. And there's certain things we have to trust God to do that we can't do. And when we trust God to do the things we can't do, and we begin to focus on the things we can do, all of a sudden we begin to see that we're in a partnership with God when it comes to raising our kids. See, as parents and leaders, the other thing we can't do is we can't make our kids have relationships with other people. But we can create environments. We can shape environments. We can create a context inside our homes where we give our kids the best shot possible to have healthy relationships. I mean, we can't make a kid believe in the Bible, but we can explain the Bible in a unique way that gives that kid the best shot possible of seeing that there's a God who loves him or her, and that God's word is actually relevant to their lives, and that God's inviting them into a bigger story for their life. Like, take a look at what Jesus, see, Jesus talks about this all the time. Take a look at Matthew chapter 5. Here's what he says. He says, you, as leaders, as parents, you're here to be a light, bringing out the God colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Take a look at these next words right here. Keep open house and be generous with your lives. And then get this next line. This is so important. He says, by opening up to others, guess what you're going to do? You're going to prompt people, primarily your kids, the next generation, to open their lives up to God, the generous Father in heaven. So you can't force kids to know God. But don't you know and don't I know that we're the absolute best shot these kids have to get a glimpse of what the character of God looks like? And so your life as a parent, your life as a leader, you know, you're the best opportunity that the next generation has to get an impression of who God is. Every now and then I'll have a conversation with a parent or a friend of ours, a parent of friends of our kids or whatever, and they'll be a little frustrated, you know, with what's going on with their kids' lives. And then we're there too at times. And they'll say something like, well, you know, I just don't know if what we're doing is really working. How can I know if what we're doing is working? And sometimes I want to say, you mean like your seventh grader? Like he or she didn't just get up every morning and say, Mom, thank you so much for showing me God's grace. I mean, you have just changed my life, you know, and I wouldn't be the person I am. They're like, no, my seventh grader's not said that to me. I'm like, it's because they're seventh graders, all right? You're never going to hear that from a seventh grader, all right? But see, we even when we don't see things happening the way we want to see them happen, you know, one of the reasons that, you know, we don't always feel things are happening is because it's related to time. It's related to time. So I want to unpack this idea of time for us a bit today so we can understand why time is so important. And this is really profound, all right? Why you can't always see the spiritual growth that you want to see in the time that you're in right now, all right? And one of the reasons for that, sometimes you can't see the spiritual growth that you want to see because it's too spiritual, right? Told you it was really profound, right? It's too spiritual. You can't measure the character that's being developed in your kids right now because it's happening so incrementally, week by week by week. So sometimes you can't even like predict the spiritual moments that are going to take place. You know why? Because they're unpredictable. And so as a parent, as a coach, as anybody who's responsible for building the next generation, we've just got to rest in the fact at times that we're doing what God has called us to do and we're building into the right things and we're growing ourselves and what it means to follow God week after week after week after week. And we have to trust that what we're doing over time is actually making a difference. See, my son Matt, he's always believed really that he was an artist. Ever since he was the age of two, he thought he was an artist. And so like every flat surface in our home was a canvas. Everyone, walls, tables, I mean, he was painting, you know, using Sharpies to create art on the wall in his room. And so, you know, and Matt's problem was that he would autograph his artwork, all right? So I'd be like, who just drew on the kitchen wall? And everybody's like, wasn't me. I'm like, well, it says Matt right here, all right? You know, it's like you just like, you know, ratted yourself out. And so, And I just remember as a dad, you know, it wasn't that I didn't appreciate his artwork, right? I mean, I really did. I just remember thinking, my word, this is so expensive. It's costing me an arm and a leg. I'm always replacing things, painting things. You know, in fact, one of his best pieces of art, by the way, which I didn't appreciate at the time, was using a Sharpie on the back quarter panel of fabric in the back seat of the van and putting an art piece. And then he signed it. And Julie and I are like, well, I guess we're going to have to sell our van to somebody who has a kid named Matt, you know? I mean, it's like, it was always signing his eyes, so proud of it. And see, in that moment, I couldn't realize what I hope I realize or have come to appreciate today. See, just recently, in the last few months, Matt started selling his artwork. And so, you know, he started selling his artwork. He makes these little spinners, these little things, you know, kids like where they spin. And he takes, like, the ball bearings out of the old rollerblades in our garage. And he uses his 3D pen and creates all kinds of art around them. Takes them to school and plays with them. And kids pay him for it, like $20, $30 a pop. Like, he's wheeling and dealing in the schools. and then he and his cousin started a YouTube channel. And they started making money. Like, change started coming into my bank account because I'd put a card on it. And then all of a sudden YouTube said, we're not paying anymore. So he hit like some weird amount of, you know, likes, you know, because they didn't want to pay bad acting or something. I thought it was really good. So they're working toward getting paid again. The point is he's now selling his art and he's making money. And I'm like, I think he owes me a lot of money. I think I've funded a lot of things. But see, I wish I would have seen then, over all these years, what I see now. Yeah, I think it would have given me encouragement and strength to kind of have a little more patience of leveraging the platform, whether it be my home or whether that be here at Crosspoint. I mean, we have kids in here breaking stuff all the time at CSM and, you know, furniture and different things. But we realize that as it relates to kids, time is a huge factor. In fact, Reggie Joyner, he says it best. He says, the secret to this is seeing what happens when you put time over time. What does that mean? It means this week's important, and this week's important, and the next week's important, and the week after that's important. If you have a kid or a teenager, every week begins to become important, but what you have collectively over time, when you put all of these weeks together, one after the other, when you put all of those together, what you have is something amazing. And this collective impact that happens over time, after week, after week, after week, creates a powerful momentum even when you don't see immediate results. Because you have to trust over time that what I'm doing is actually making an impact. We have a chalkboard in our kitchen on a wall. It's the whole wall. And our kids change it out regularly. It's kind of the dream of the next thing. And when we discovered that my wife Julie had cancer a couple months ago, as we shared this with our kids, we made this front center on the dream board. In fact, here's what we put up there. We said, we're going to beat cancer, and I've added a few explicatives in there. And then we said, we're going to help people see God in the process. That's our goal right now. And by the way, Julie's doing great. Many of you have been praying and asking about her. I mean, she's doing fantastic. She had a surgery this week, and margins came back clear. We just got the word yesterday. It's just, we're excited about what, you know, we have an incredible medical team, and we know most of that's been powered by prayers, and so we thank you for those. You know, she'll still have some treatment coming on over the next couple months, but, you know, I'm human as a dad, just like you are. And you know, when we shared with our kids, you know, this kind of major life thing that, you know, is happening now and impacting our family, you know, I wondered, what's the cumulative effect of the influence we've been having on our kids? I mean, is this going to rock their faith? How are they going to respond to this? And here was so cool. So when we put this up on the dream board, the very first thing before everything else went around that, my daughter, Macy, wrote this. Fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by my name. You're mine. Isaiah 43. She put this up as our dream verse. Then in the midst of what we're going through, you're mine, and I've redeemed you, and I call you by name. And I sit back, I'm like, oh my word. When it doesn't seem like we're really making a difference, there's a cumulative effect that happens over time, and things begin to sink in. See, when you invest in a kid over time, whether it's your kids, other kids, you build into their identity. You build into, you know, you begin to create a sense of meaning in their life that just can't happen in a single moment. Right? I mean, what every kid wants, what every teenager wants, is for you to just show up in their life and just be present right now. I mean, think about it this way. Have you ever, like, asked yourself the question, if you're a believer in Jesus and you have a relationship with him, have you ever asked yourself, like, how do I really know God loves me? I mean, have you ever really dug into that? Have you ever really determined that? I mean, when you look at the story of the Bible, I mean, it's interesting to see how God communicates his love for us over time, right? I mean, think about this. I mean, isn't it true when the very first sin happened in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve? I mean, God could have like remedied that right away. I mean, in 24 hours, he could have been like, all right, got to bring Jesus now. Jesus, gonna send Jesus to the earth, put him on the cross, bam. Adam and Eve, the first sin is redeemed. Within 24 hours, it's all taken care of. He could have done it that way. But isn't it amazing that he didn't? That he actually said, I'm gonna walk this out over a long period of time. I'm gonna pursue people for years and years and years. And even when they rebel, even when they turn away and go the other direction, I'm going to keep going after them over and over and over again. So that over time, not just in one moment, but over time, you can see that there's certain things you couldn't see in just one moment. And it all came to a climactic moment last weekend, right? With Easter. We celebrate Easter. I mean, God sent his son to the earth in flesh and love, went to the cross to pay for our sins. And all of a sudden, we see that God communicates over time. I've been sharing with you. I love you and pursue you, and I love you unconditionally. And now here's this final expression of it. See, this is the reason it's so significant, because I run into teenagers and kids all the time, you know, parents who are saying, hey, my kids just don't feel that love from God. They don't feel that worth, that significance. How do I get my kids to see Jesus for who he really is? I think the secret is over time. Which means if you're here for the first time and you want that for your kids, you have to come back. All right? You got to start building this into your life. So what does this mean? All right, here's a few walkouts on this, all right? Let's take a look at a few ways this happens. How about words? How about words over time? Words over time are powerful. Do you realize that the average kid hears 6 to 7 words of criticism for every 1 word of affirmation? 6 to 7 words of criticism for every 1 word of affirmation. Can you imagine the cumulative effect over time of negative words? And can you imagine what happens when positive words begin to pour into a child's life? Take a look at the book of James. He talks about the power of words. He says, a bit in the mouth of a horse controls the whole horse. A small rudder on a huge ship in the hands of a skilled captain sets course in the face of the strongest winds. A word out of your mouth may seem of no account, but it can accomplish nearly anything or destroy it. Yesterday, we had a memorial service here at Cross Point for the father of one of the guys that plays in our band. He usually stands right up here when he's on, Robbie Michael. His dad passed away about a month ago. And so we had this great, great service, this beautiful time of sharing about his father and the impact he had on his life and his kids, his family's life and community, the way he served our country. And as we were preparing for the service, Robbie shared with me that, you know, he and his dad had a pretty tumultuous relationship for a lot of years. They didn't connect on much. And that was always kind of a difficult thing. And yet over the last number of weeks, months, even the last couple of years, his dad really began to make a turn on that. And one of the things that became a connector for them was music. In fact, this past fall, Robbie was a part of PJ's album that he released earlier this January this year, All the Astronauts. Robbie was a part of playing on the album, and so when they were doing the pre-release, he told his dad about it, and his dad said, hey, I'm really interested in the album. Can you send it to me? So he sent him the digital link for the album, and he said, you know, an hour later after I sent it to my dad, I got a call back from my dad, and he was crying on the other end of the phone. He said, son, that means a lot to me, what you sent me. And then in the next moment, he heard words that in 30 years of his life, he'd never heard from his father. His father said 5 words. He said, Robbie, I'm so proud of you. He said, Gert, I never heard those words. And I want you to know, if you are a parent of adult children, it is never too late to start the process of week after week after week, building into the life of your child, your adult child, your kids you coach, whatever it might be, words over time are game changers. How about fun over time? Fun over time. Have you ever thought of fun over time as a theological concept? I mean, it really is. Right? I mean, just look around at nature. How many of the animals that you saw this morning, rabbits in the yard, birds, they're just playing. They're just having fun all over the place. My dog, Minnie, she thinks every moment is a fun moment. All right? I mean, every moment's a play moment. And with the rabbits and with the birds, all right? I mean, think about the cumulative effect of fun over time, week in, week out, over the course of time. It does good for a kid's soul. In fact, the great writer of wisdom in Ecclesiastes says this. He says, however many years anyone may live, let them enjoy them all. Let them enjoy them all. You know, one of the hardest days for me as a parent, at least one of the top days that was just incredibly difficult, was about 4 to 6 years into CrossPoint's existence. It was a Sunday afternoon. I was at home after services, and I was pushing, I believe, my daughter on the swing, maybe my son. And just out of the blue, Maisie said, "Hey, Dad, I don't really like our house as much as I did our old one." Okay, well, so I started digging into that a little bit. I'm like, "Well, you not like your room, or can we paint it a different color?" You know, and she said, no. It's just that at our old house, you used to play out in the backyard a lot more than you do at this one. That's like a dagger in my heart, right? So Julie and I, we talked about this, and we just decided we're gonna resolve that from that day forward, we're gonna make sure we have high play in our home. So, you know, we're always having high play. In fact, at Christmas, one of the best gifts we gave to our kids at Christmas this year was this drifter trike. In fact, we have a couple of them now. If you've now, this is Meredith. You can see they made guardrails with pillows, and because the back wheels sway, so you drift. And they're really made for the outdoors, but our inside has become a racetrack, and they rather ride them inside than outside. And it becomes so frustrating at times because they bang up the walls. There's all kinds of scars. In fact, when you walk in our front door, here's what it looks like, all right? Right smack dab as soon as you come in. In fact, I said, you know, a month or so, I'm like, "Guys, you're tearing up the house." And Matt said, "Dad, we need guardrails." I'm like, "It's a house. It's not made for guardrails." So I just resolved. In fact, I saw this plaque. I got this for my wife the other day for her birthday. "Pardon the mess, my children are making memories." Just to remind us that their cumulative fun over time is a game changer. You can't overestimate the power of fun over time. Fun over, you know, words over time, stories over time. That's a whole other thing we don't have time to get into. Take a look at Philippians chapter 3. Paul says this. He says, "I'm not saying that I have this all together, that I have it made, but I am well on my way." They go down to verse 14. He says, "By no means do I count myself an expert in all this, but I've got my eye on the goal." A couple years ago, our kids came home from school. And it was near the end of the school year. It's like a May afternoon. And they were convinced, they'd been studying fossils and dinosaurs. They were convinced if we'd let them dig under the playset, there would be a dinosaur. And so we armed them with forks and knives and spoons and, you know, shovels. And they're out digging away, right, for like 2 days. And the neighbor kids are joining. It's like a full excavation project right in the middle of the backyard. And one of our neighbors comes over, knocks on the door. He's like, "Hey, you realize your kids are digging up your backyard, right?" I'm like, "Oh, yeah, they're having fun." And he's like, "Well, you know that's not going to fare well for like your grass in the summer." And I thought for a moment, and I thought, here's what I said. I said, "You know, I totally get that. But we're not raising grass, we're raising kids." Because my eye was on the goal. My eye was on the goal. So here's the thing. When you take time over time, week in, week out, guess what you're doing? This accumulative effect, it results in you making history. When you do things week after week, month after month in the life of a kid, you're making history. And to raise an effective generation that does greater things than us, they need history with us. I mean, in our CrossPoint student environments, kids' environments, you know who the most effective volunteers are? They're not the ones who, you know, have all the Bible knowledge. They're not the ones who are, you know, educationally trained. I mean, they're not even the ones who have all the right words and know what to say. I mean, they may be effective, but not necessarily because of those things. They're the ones who have a history with the kids back there. They're the ones who are there, you know, on the schedule a couple times a month, you know, because they understand the value of cumulative experiences over time. And when they sit in that small group, even on a day when they're feeling a little under the weather, they're like, "You know what? I have a responsibility to build into these kids. I'm going to be there. Even when it's snowing out and it'd be easy to call it in, I'm going to be there." Because they understand there's a sweat equity if over time building a history with these kids. See, kids need lives that build into them to know that they're loved, to know what it means to be forgiven, to know what it means to be redeemed, to be invited into a bigger story. And how does that do that? How does that happen? By just showing up and being present with them day after day, week after week. As a mom, as a dad, as a leader, as a mentor, as a coach, as a, you know, as somebody who's on-ramping, you know, employees that you're building into as the next generation, as a pastor, as a volunteer, we show up in the world over and over and over again. And we make history. Tell you what, man, I'm excited. I'm excited about this series. I don't know where all this is going to go, but I'm confident, you know, wherever you're at in your process of building into the next generation, that God's really going to be landing some things for us. In fact, I think maybe even today. So I want you to take out your connection card as we, I try to land this. On the back are some next steps, and I just want you to work through these, look through these, identify something you can do this week. Maybe it's just committing today, saying, I'm going to be here each of the next 4 weeks, you know, for this series as I learn what it means to launch rockets, launch this next generation. Maybe it's saying, hey, I want to answer these two questions. What do I need to do less of, and what's the thing I need to do more of? Or maybe it's setting 60 minutes aside to read this book this week, grabbing one of these on the way out, digging it out, wherever it is. Maybe it's volunteer. There's all kinds of opportunities. You see, here's the thing. Sometimes it gets messy, right? And I don't know how else to explain this to you than this. You know, when you got a two-year-old, it's like this is what you have left, right? You get what I'm saying? And when they're three, and those weeks pass, you're only going to know that three-year-old as a three-year-old once, right? When they're four, you no longer know them as a three-year-old. And then all of a sudden, they're five. And all of a sudden, they're six. And all of a sudden, they're like 10. And you only get one year to know that kid is a 10-year-old. And then all of a sudden, they're 13, right? And as a 13-year-old, like, you only get to know them once as a 13-year-old. And then I'm like, I'm done. I don't want to know them ever again after they're 13, right? And then guess what happens? They get to 14, and you know what happens? It just goes like this. And before you know it, the time is gone. And so we have to think, what am I doing to make the most of the time I have? That's going to be my prayer for us as we head through these next weeks. Let's stand, and let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, I just pray that you would help us to know what to do with what we've just heard this morning, God. Man, what an incredible responsibility we have as parents, as leaders, as people who build into the next generation. And God, I pray that as we prepare to leave this place this morning, as we go on with our day, as we go on with our weekend, God, would you remind us about the moments that we have with our kids? Help us to see that these are opportunities to do time over time, words over time, fun over time. As we have teenagers in our circles, we coach kids, wherever that place of influence is with the next generation, God, help us to build into them. And God, I just pray that you would begin a new work even right here, right here, right here, right here, right now, today.